Nemechek.
Here.
Conklin.
Here.
Moody.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Well, she's big. We're going to have to do a badge attending ceremony. We do.
Good evening, everyone. Police officers' badges date back to medieval times when knights wore a coat of armor and a coat of arms representing their allegiance and loyalty. A police officer's badge is perhaps the most visible and recognizable symbol of policing around the world. It is seen by many as a sign of authority, sacrifice, and service. At the Boyne City Police Department, we have a tradition on earning your badge. When you're hired, you get a plain badge that only bears the words of police on it. Only after the training phase, when an officer has demonstrated their knowledge, skills, and ability to perform what we demand of our police officers, will they earn their official Boyne City Police Department badge. You're being entrusted with this badge as a symbol of your worthiness as a police officer, to serve and protect the people from whom you derive your power and authority, to enforce the laws of the land without fear or favor. Each officer here has helped you through your training in one fashion or another. And while you've worn several badges in your career, we'd like to present to you with your official Boyne City badge.
Ben did a great job in the academy. I went down and visited him.
I could walk into the academy, and I was with Assistant Chief Mercer, and I said, if I had to pick three out of the 17 that I've looked out as these kids were doing their PT and their classwork, I said, I want that kid. He presented himself very well. Probably about half the instructors are friends of mine, and they have all reached out to me and said, hey, you got Ben, right? I said, yeah, I do. He's got a good guy. So he's going through his field training office, his field training program with Officer Smith. In about 14 weeks, we'll be back up here with the badge ceremony for him as well. But until then, he gets the shiny police-only badge. Would you like to say anything back?
No, I just appreciate all the support. The academy was tough, but I learned a lot, 17-week period. And I'm just looking forward to continuing that learning process under Officer Smith. And over the next 14 weeks, I'm just preparing to serve the community. So thank you all.
Niedhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Moody.
Aye.
Motion carried.
I see that Mitchell is in the audience. Welcome, Mitchell, and we appreciate you stepping up and becoming a member of the library board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, now we have item five, citizen comments on non-agenda items. Anyone in the audience who wishes to address the commission?
Hi, I'm Sandy Pritchard, 526 East Clinton Street. Last week's city manager report, I'm reading the minutes and I'll just state what it says. All three pumps at the Rivermouth pump station are now installed and connected. We continue to have frequent clogging issues with the new pumps, which we are working with our engineers to get figured out. And then also the new generator hadn't been fully installed and other items to be completed. My question is, we engaged an engineering company to find it. So I'm curious to understand, do you mean clogging? I mean, what is happening that the pumps don't operate? It's a highly engineered system. So I was curious what they ran into, what you run into in this operation. It's odd to me. We've been a couple years at this. It's a major construction project, and we hired expert engineers. So they caught my attention after the fact to hear that we have new pumps that are, is it clogging really what's going on, or are they not able to pump? Is it cavitating, or why don't they operate as intended? That was one. And the other question is, the other items remain, usually that sounds like a punch list that typically one would have at the end of the job, and I'm just curious what else was on there. It says other items remain to be completed.
Any other questions? Mike, do you have an update that you could provide now, or would you rather...
No, I can give at least a start of a
two brand new pumps that are in there. There's three pumps total. The two new pumps are matching the existing one that's been there for a couple of years. And the debris that travels down the sewer lines, lots and lots of hygiene products, things of that nature, they're gathering up and they are at various times clogging the pumps, literally clogging them. And we're trying to figure out through the engineers what is the remedy for that. Our new DPW water, wastewater utility director, Doug, has been active on this as well too, and we're working to try and understand the issue and what the proper correction for it. With regards to the generator and other items, we're not quite to the pump stage, to the punch list portion of it yet. We're not that close to completion. There are some significant items that are yet to be done. A lot of them are just been delayed with regards to, like, the generator took so long to get here, and now they're working on connecting that and getting all the communication systems and things of that nature. So we're not so close that we're down to the punch list items, but we are to the point where the pumps are operational.
So there's a remedy that's been put in place, like an upstream filtration system or something.
They recognize the problem and they're working on solving the problem. I don't know if there's any
same. So the word was truly clogging, and that is exactly what's happening to it. Okay. That's saying that debris is getting to the pumps. There was no upstream filtration, apparently.
Anyone else? Okay. Do we have any correspondence? We have an invoice dated May 2nd, 2020.
Mayor?
Yeah.
We did have one other person that was going to speak under citizens' comments, and that was our new representative from Housing North, who's our Charlevoix County Housing Coordinator, Zachary Samples. I probably should have given him the high sign that it was time to get up at that point. But we wanted to have him come to the commission, and we thought this would be a good way to have him introduce himself for a couple minutes with the commission.
Welcome. Hi guys, like Mike said, I'm Zach Samples. I'm here with Housing North. I don't know what are you one of those.
There we go.
Got a little presentation here. So I'm the Housing Ready Coordinator for Charlevoix County. I'm working with Boyne City, City of Charlevoix County, Charlevoix East Jordan. You guys are the ones that ponied up for this position to be filled, and that's primarily where my time is being spent. I do spend a little bit of time helping coordinate with the townships when there is something that's kind of infrastructure related that I can help coordinate that. But most of my time is spent with you guys here. So.
Just tell me when you'd like to advance this.
Yeah, let's go for the next one here. So I can't read all that to you, and I won't bother. But this is just kind of highlighting some of the achievements here from Housing North of Charlevoix County. I can't take credit for them. I just started here a month or two ago. Steve Snell was here before that, and he really laid a lot of the groundwork to get things started. So. I know Steve came out with you guys. I've seen his work. He gave you guys a lot of numbers. Did a lot of advocacy stuff. My hope is I don't necessarily have to do that. I think we all kind of recognize that there is a problem. If you guys want to see some numbers, I'm happy to bring them to you. Just let me know. But I think my time is better spent hitting the ground, working with Scott, working with Mike, working with developers, and trying to make those numbers work for everyone. You know, if you guys want to see numbers and you want the advocacy, you want to see what's happening, where the numbers are in Charlevoix County compared to the rest of the state, I'm happy to do that. But as of lately, that's my mission has been on the ground, is trying to get a project built. So.
Do you want to continue on this, please. Or is this a different presentation?
It's a little bit different than I was expecting. That's okay. I must have clicked the wrong one. I have two ready to go. So.
Oh, this is the one I got.
Yeah, that's fine. Same gist. So again, these are more of the achievements there, and I can't see exactly what this one reads, but more alluding back to kind of some of the stuff that Steve had been working on in Charlevoix County prior to me showing up. And we can send you this presentation too if you guys want. My other one that I've got, I can send to Mike to distribute as well. It has a lot of clickable links, and you guys can pull stuff up, and it's got the most recent studies and things like that. So I'll make sure Mike has it if you guys want it. Again, achievements, it looks like.
Yes.
So, yeah, a lot of achievements there. And I think there's a lot of mixed in of the goals of Housing North, with trying to fill those gaps where, it, you know, for these guys here, for your staff here to only be working on housing wouldn't be fair to the city with everything else they have going on. And that's kind of the role that I'm hoping to fill, is where I can focus on the housing. We recognize that that's an issue, and these guys can still do their day-to-day with my assistance on the housing portion. And this slide here just kind of outlines kind of the vocabulary. It's got the 80 to 120% AMI, or it's broken down into the different percentages actually. So there's the affordable housing portion, which would be under, I believe that's under 80%. The 80 to 120 being the affordable housing, and anything above that being the market rate housing. I think that graphic's important to look at. The vernacular can get kind of mixed up, and this just kind of helps us be a little bit more precise when we look at those numbers and we say, okay, here's where our housing gaps are. You know, is it really the market rate? There's some, but really it's in that attainable and affordable rate that we're really lacking. So can we go to the next one? So this slide just kind of outlines, it's one of the big proponents that the Housing North stands for, is about 30% of your income being spent on housing. Any more than that kind of stretches people too thin. With inflation rising, wages aren't rising always at that same rate. It's making that 30% harder and harder for most people to deal with. And that's kind of the issue that we're, the crux of the issue that we're facing right now. One of the statistics that I'm, actually, you know what, it's in this presentation, so I'll wait for it. And I think it's the next slide. This one, it is. So the median home price in March 2023 was $314,000. That's up from 14% since last year. So we're to say things are kind of dying down. That's 14% is still a big jump. And you know, you can use statistics however which way you want, and there's, you know, so many sources they come from, but I think from at a basic level that we're still experiencing problems in housing here is what I'm trying to represent there. I think it's $1,908 is basically what that median income should be spending on housing right there. In 2020, the median household income was $55,000, and that equates down to about $1,400. So we've seen an increase there. That's probably one of our most recent studies, is the Networks Northwest Housing Study there, 2019, with target market analysis. That's where a lot of these numbers are pulled from. But it's basically showing that our region has a great need for housing there, over 10,000 just in rental homes alone. That's our region. That's not the city of Boone City. We're not hoping to put 10,000 homes in here. But we'll do what we can with what we can. That's the hope. So we'll go over to the next one. Okay. So there's the legislation that just passed in December. That's still kind of figuring out all the components. I think there's four that were passed. And that's a big part of what Housing North does, and that's what Yara's actually at right now. She's in Lansing working on that advocacy stuff for the state to represent not just housing as a state, but really the Northwest region where we are, because a lot of that primary focus is on Metro Detroit, the Grand Rapids and the Lansing areas. They get all the funding, but we have those problems too. So she's trying to get our fair share as well. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, with working with local developers, working with city staff, and kind of filling the gaps where everyone is and kind of getting everybody in the same room in a sense, or at least on the same page, whether it's just phone call, or sitting down in a meeting, whatever I can do to help. But that's kind of, that's the lane I'm kind of taking right now. And this is just one, we want Boyne City to be a community of hardworking people and young families can afford to live. You don't want to outprice the people that built this town. That's what I've got. And if you guys have any other questions, please let me know. Yeah.
So, are you familiar with Boeing USA's request for rezoning in Boeing Valley Township?
I'm a little familiar with that, yeah.
Would that benefit housing anyway?
It's got potential to. It does. I don't want to act like I'm familiar enough to know that I can lay down definitive answers on that. But it's on my radar for sure.
I didn't know if you talked to them about your background.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A little bit about you?
Yeah, I'm excited about the housing portion, yeah. So I've got degrees in natural resources management. I've got my master's in urban and regional planning. American Institute of Certified Planners certified. I've worked with the MPO in Genesee County, with Manistee County, the city of Manistee, the townships, many of the townships in there, most recently at the city of Petoskey. I've kind of bounced all over in a lot of different capacities as a planner. But I'm really liking being focused now here with just kind of a single issue focus of the housing is what I'm enjoying.
You can tell them where you live.
Oh, well, you need to find me. I am a city resident. And I'm slated to be on the ZBA in July. So I'll be here for a year in July, and that's when I can sign up. So unless we have an influx of residents that want to be on the ZBA before that, no, maybe.
Well, is there going to be something in the future with Housing North and our contract with them and leaving and there's
so the city commission approved the contract we put up when this came up last fall, I believe it was. I'd have to look at the exact dates. But I reviewed the minutes once we heard that they brought the person back on. Because Marty asked at the last meeting with regards to the payments of bills and things of that time. And we paid the bills that we had been getting were on a quarterly basis. And we paid that first quarter, and then Steve left, and we hadn't made any payments since. The contract was approved by the city commission. It was a contingent upon having, the payments were basically put on pause until they had full staffing working with us again. So we're going to be resuming those quarterly payments, and they're a total over $2,000 a quarter.
Is that something, I don't know how much detail we want to get into this, but one thing you mentioned was you're spending a lot of time in the city of Boyne City, like that's your main focus. Don't you like Charlevoix, East Jordan?
That's where you're
evenly distributed, where you're kind of working with the county and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Marty, did you have something?
My thanks for the way you started out, and then we kind of got into the numbers again, but I was. It was more than refreshing hearing that we're going to actually try to do something and put boots on the ground instead of numbers, because that's all we ever got was numbers. Mm-hmm. And it was just numbers. And, so talking to developers, I'm all for it. I get that. I respectfully disagree with what the city manager just said. All we said was that we're going to finish out our 9 months of the contract. Once that comes up, then we said that we would relook at it and vote on it. So we have 3 quarters left to go. I just want that to be clear that we're not all in. So, but hopefully we can be. We start. blood, new opportunity, see where it takes us. And hopefully it'll just turn into an opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Marty. Anybody else?
Congratulations, welcome.
Yeah.
And I agree with Marty, let's get rolling.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Thanks, thank you. Thank you.
That's two Wednesdays. I was thinking that was wrong. At 5:30 p.m. and everybody's welcome for that. And if
you have any questions or want additional items on this or other items, we'll be glad to try and address them.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions? Comments? All right. Moving on, we have reports. We have reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have the Historic District Commission regular meeting minutes of March 16, 2023. We have the Parks and Recreation Commission regular meeting minutes of April 6, 2023. The Planning Commission regular meeting minutes of April 17, 2023. And the Airport Advisory Board regular meeting minutes of April 27, 2023. Any comments or questions, commissioners? I have one, Mike, and that was on the airport board, and there was that report from the state that had a list of things that needed to be done. Was anything alarming there?
The major issue is with regards to the number of trees that are around the property and the impact that has on the approach and departure lanes. So the park board will be reviewing that at their next, the airport board will be reviewing that at their next meeting. Talking about how to address these.
How often is that inspection done?
It's every few years. The state tries to do them every couple of years, but they've been kind of backed up. They've had a huge changeover in personnel. So we had some new eyes on the field this time. We had some really good discussions with them while they were here. They seemed impressed, but they did flag a number of items that need to be addressed here, and they're doing similar things at other airports in the area, and, well, I should say across the state.
Moving on, we have the old business. We have short-term rental license update. Updated short-term rental ordinance implementation by Planning Director Scott McPherson.
Thank you, Mayor. As requested, I'm coming to the commission to give an update. Shortly after the short-term rental ordinance became effective, the planning department began the process of notifying present and past identified short-term rental owners of the new ordinance and requirements and process to obtain a license. In this process, over 250 letters were mailed, and the planning department communicated directly with many short-term rental owners by phone, email, and in person. The first short-term rental permit was issued on January 4th, and permit 161 was issued on April 26th. This represents approximately 99% of the currently active short-term rental units in the city, and it's anticipated that we will reach 100% compliance in the next couple of weeks. I've had communication with outstanding people that don't have licenses, and they do intend to get them in the next week or two coming up here. So currently, as of May 1st, and as of today, there are 161 licenses for short-term rentals in the city, and that breaks down to 102 in the traditional residential district. Eight of those are accessory dwelling units. Seven, that makes up for 7.8% of the housing stock in that district. Multi-family residential district, there are 22. That's 3.9% of the district. You may recall some of the figures from past updates show a little higher number in that district, because those included the one, the Water Street Inn. But after reviewing their classification, how they run their operation, they are more of a hotel, that's by definition. So those were excluded and not required to get. In the central business district, there's 20, which makes up 16.9% of the housing units in that district. The waterfront residential district, there's 9, which represents 7.2. The rural estate district, there's 7, which is 5.2%. And 1 in the professional office district, which is 7.7%. As expected, for a couple of months following the adoption of the ordinance, much time was dedicated to sending letters, issuing licenses, and answering questions. With what appears to be the majority of licenses issued, the time now needed to, for administration of the ordinance has dropped to anticipated levels of about an hour a day. the Boyne City Police Department, and I'm speaking with Chief Spate, has not seen an appreciable increase in complaints or enforcement activity due to the operation of short-term rentals. In July, the contract term with Granicus will expire. Currently, the city has a contract for two modules of their services, the address identification module and the compliance monitoring module. The current annual contract cost for the address identification is $6,740, and the compliance monitoring is $4,050. The current contract was for $2,988, and it was prorated for a partial year because we didn't start that until around October. Given the current inflationary trends, I anticipated that these amounts will increase for the upcoming year. The address identification has worked well and is seen as a necessary tool for the successful administration of the ordinance. With the initial mass mailings completed, we've gone through the compliance monitoring module. The value of this service is now reduced. With the current database of license holders, phone numbers, email addresses, reminders for contract renewals or responding to any issues can be done quickly and efficiently through phone and email. Occasionally, there may be a need for a letter to be sent, but this is anticipated to be a limited occurrence now. With the limited value the compliance monitoring service now offers, I do not see a compelling reason to renew this module of the contract for the upcoming year. For about the last month, the number of active SDRs has changed little. We've had probably about 140 that are actively operating since probably February. That's less than the number that's licensed, as there's a number of licenses, youth operators that don't actively advertise right now, but they do have a license. However, it is anticipated that some short-term rental units will become active as we progress in the summer seasons. The 161 licenses issued so far have generated $48,300 in license fees. In the upcoming years, the collected license fees are estimated to be less due to the lower renewal fee, and that not all license holders choose to annually renew their license. It's estimated that in the upcoming years, annual license fees collected will be in the $35,000. At this time, the license fees appear to be sufficient to cover the costs of the administration of the program. Overall, the licensing process has gone smoothly with no real issues. The large majority of short-term rental owners have been friendly, cooperative, and understanding, with only a few registering complaints about the need for an ordinance, a license, or the fee amount. I believe one of the primary reasons for the relative smooth implementation of the program can be traced back to the transparent and thoughtful process the City Commission took in the development of the ordinance and the creation of an ordinance that was fair and equitable and accomplished the goals for which it was established.
Scott, does for the top the TRD district 102 and 7.8, does that 7.8% represent the 80 use in that as well, or is that
that's total, so it'd be a little less with just with those
removing the 80 use?
Yeah, right, about 7.7.
And how has that changed since the last time you reported to the commission? Is that 7.8 higher?
Since the last time I reported, there was 80 use, but there was only, I believe, 91 or 92 total units, so it went up by about 8.
And just ballpark, do you remember the last time you updated us on that?
That was in February when...
It was February 14th.
Yeah, okay.
Went up 2. There were 92 plus the 8, so that was 100. Now we're at 102, I'd say it's 94.
Thank you.
So, Scott, did you say that, so we aren't requiring Water Street Inn to have a license? Is that what you said?
By definition, those units meet our definition of hotel and are excludes hotels from requiring a license. And the reason they meet that definition, they have services that are offered at that inn. They also pay a tax, the convention bureau tax. So they're not a typical dwelling unit, even though they can be and are used for dwelling units.
Okay. Any comments or questions from the audience?
I'm Sandy Grutcher, 526 East Lincoln Street. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the answer to Marty's question about One Live Street. You said, I think you said it fits our ordinance definition of a hotel. And you said something about a tax that is paid. What was the name of that tax?
It's a hotel and resort tax.
So those rooms, when they're rented, are being charged than the usual?
They're being taxed, yeah.
As a hotel?
Yeah.
And sales tax, I presume. Okay, thank you. Just a question for Mr. Spade, I guess, or a clarification. Has not seen an appreciable increase in complaints and or enforcement activity. And I would be curious to know what you had seen and how many other complaints you have seen. It's no appreciable increase, what does that mean?
Other than the...
Sandy,
I'm sorry.
To address that question, or do you have other questions so we can do it all at once?
Okay, so that's one.
Okay.
I understand correctly, we're not going to do the compliance monitoring. And that there will be a proposal potentially to continue with the address. The question is, are we going to continue with the address identification? It's a comment. It says that we got $48,300 in license fees, and there is logically anticipated to be some decline in revenue estimate of $35,000. Will that 48.3 go into a short-term rental enforcement fund of its own, so as to not be absorbed into the city and to be saved for a rainy day, should it be needed? And I guess it's debatable as to the. I agree. There was a great amount of awesome work done with public hearings on SDRs and the creation of the ordinance was a lot of energy that everybody worked really hard, including Scott's team, and I appreciate that. I don't know that it accomplished the goals of all the stakeholders in the community. We ended up without a cap. We ended up with the greatest focus that wasn't, I guess, protected was the traditional residential district because it does represent 63% of the total number of STRs, 63% are in the residential district. And that does not include owner-occupied property, which has a nebulous, unenforceable, content about 6 months residency. And I don't think that was sufficient because that's too easy for a workaround. Actually, during the course of the public hearings, there were even people in the waterfront district who have Mega Millions in their homes were not happy about having short-term rentals next door. And there was a lot of discussion about how many people are able to go to the bank and buy beyond their means of a normal person that I would have to compete with because I want to live in my house full time. But they go to the bank with a business model that shows they can pay that $2,000 mortgage because they're going to rent it out X period of time. So I still think we have a ways to go. I'm getting where the people of Wayne City would like to see STRs. So that's my comment, but my question is stand.
So just to make sure I've got them all, Sandy, you're wondering about the impact of the police department's response, the compliance monitoring, it's short-term rental enforcement fund, where that money will go.
Yes, the it's generated revenue.
Oh, but I listened to your questions.
Yeah.
The questions.
Yes.
Just clarification from Scott. Just an accurate consensus of a comment you made. TRD percentage does not include owner occupied.
It's my understanding. They don't have the license.
No, that's not true at all.
Okay, correct.
I think you could say, can you highlight on that, Scott? Or clarify on that comment?
Anyone who operates a short-term rental as defined by the ordinance, which is you rent for more than 28 days.
Correct.
In a year period.
Correct.
On a short-term basis, which requires the license.
Okay.
So the triangulates question, I guess. So the 102 includes owner occupied.
Correct.
Okay. I stand corrected. Thank you.
Scott, could you address, or Kevin, could you first address the question about the comment on the police department?
Sure. I remember back when we first started on this, there was a couple of properties where we knew we had complaints on that were directly related to short-term rentals. We had some people speak on it in here, the owner, or not the owners, but the neighbors. I have not had any complaints on other properties since that I know of, and I don't have anything popping up that I can say was directly related to short-term rentals. Scott had asked me a week or so ago, he gave me all the addresses, and we started looking through them, and there was nothing that was popping up that would be directly related to short-term rentals that we could find out.
Scott, could you do the compliance monitoring?
Yeah, as I explained in my memo, I don't see the value of the compliance monitoring module. I can do that and check it in-house without spending that money. In regards to the address identification, I would highly recommend to the City Commission to continue with that portion of the contract. I think that's a vital tool.
Do you have just a ballpark idea of what the savings is not utilizing that modular compliance and doing that in-house with their administration?
Well, the last year's quoted contract is $4,050. It may be up a little bit from that. I would imagine probably $4,000 to $5,000.
So minimum probably $4,000 savings?
Yeah.
Does that take into account the time you're going to have to spend doing all that too? What do you see?
Well, the bulk of the work of that was the initial mass mailings, and they did all that, so I didn't just send 200 letters to go out, so I didn't have to do that. Now, it would be, when a new one pops up, I would have to send a letter to that, which isn't very often. And since I have a database of all those owners now, I can directly communicate that with them by email, so the time amount is within
and then the other thing is about the fees and the fund.
As you may recall, when we discussed the establishment of these fees cannot be more than the required amount of time and effort and money spent to administer the program. And I went through a pretty detailed listing of expenses and came up with an estimate for that. City Commission established that fee for that reason. So these fees are directly related to the administration of the program, and if they're found to be too much, that's considered a tax. If they're too less, it's considered a subsidizing those. So you kind of got to get that sweet spot where you're charging what it costs the administration of the program.
But you can't create a fund for a rate?
No, you can't create a fund. That would be
paper route. That was my biggest concern, and that was kind of the broken record comments that I've made all along, is making sure that your administration office wasn't being bogged down by this additional operational process that you guys would be encountering, because it is a lot of dwellings and there's a lot of additional work. So I'm glad that the work and the effort that your team has put into it already, the quality of the work is already displayed in this update. So I would be interested in seeing an update potentially in another 3 months to 6 months.
Yeah, maybe once we get through the summer, maybe we kind of got early fall.
And I would even say, if Scott, at any point in time you're seeing a major influx where you feel the commission needs to react and become very sensitive to it, please approach the city administrator and allow that to become something that you can step forward at any point in time. I would express, I don't know if there would be a consensus here, but an open door if you're seeing a major influx or anything that we need to get a hand on or anything.
I received that message last time we spoke about getting up towards that higher level of number of units. So yeah, that's on my mind. If I see that, I definitely want to push it.
Okay. I agree wholeheartedly. Thanks for the update. Very concise and clear about where you're coming from. Again, Scott, I agree with what was just said. And I think, another look at it, unless something drastic arises somewhere in September or something, I think would be great if we got another update. And I think it's working out with my plan.
No, I just support keeping an eye on that traditional residential district for a cap. So far, we agreed we're going to look at it. Let's continue to do that.
Scott, I would just like to clarify the number from your memo on February 14th when we talked about the cap, that there were 94 currently active in the traditional residential district. So that included ADUs as well, correct?
I don't have that memo in front of me, but I believe so.
I have it here.
Okay, and then what's the second?
Total 83 short-term rental license applications have been submitted. 66 have been issued. 17 applications are pending payment. In the traditional residential district, a total of 63 applications have been submitted. 50 licenses have been issued. you got 10, and you know, you can't react. I mean, that number. So I guess in your mind, there's a number here that's been established, and once we get beyond that number, what is that number?
Well, the number that was talked about at the commission was the 10%. So once we start approaching that, that's was the threshold that the commission wanted.
I'm just going off of memory here from the budgeting session, and I believe that was the 10%. As we approach, or if we got close to 10%, I think there was a consensus at the budget meeting. We asked Scott to approach the commission if he started seeing the TRD percentage approaching that 10%.
Well, I was sick at that particular budget meeting.
Right.
But we did have it on February 14th. We had a long discussion about setting a cap, and we didn't do it. And, you know, at the consensus at a budget hearing, I don't think it's appropriate for something that's as serious as this, that we're allowing residents in our traditional residential neighborhoods to be sold for short-term rentals. I think we have enough, personally, and I just want that to be in the record. So, thank you, Scott. Anything else, Commissioner? Okay. Moving on. We have new business. Zoning Board of Appeals appointment. Consider the recommendation of appointing the zoning assistant body, Shinat Tonga, to appoint Robin Tashore to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a term ending September 1st, 2025, and to consider appointing a member of the City Commission to a term that ends concurrently with their commission term. Scott, I assume you're going to take that.
As Bonnie pointed out, currently we have more vacancies than appointed persons on the DBA. We have Rob Carlisle is the only appointed person, and Aaron Place, who's on the Planning Commission, is the alternate. So we do have one application for a qualified person that can be appointed and being recommended. Ms. Tector is appointed by the commission. Bonnie also indicates that it is the discretion of the commission to appoint a city commission member. Personally, I don't recommend that, just for the potential of a ZBA sitting in judgment of a decision that the city commission makes. That to me is a conflict. In my mind, the planning commission representation by the city commission is different, as the planning commission and city commission would never have a situation where one is judging a final decision that they have made. The only things that come from the planning commission to the city commission are recommendations. So there's never a final decision. But in the case of the ZBA, there is the potential for a final decision by the city commission to be in front of the ZBA. So you have potentially the same person standing in judgment of their decision. So in a normal case where you have plenty of people to appoint to these boards, I wouldn't recommend it, but if we needed to have a quorum, I would reluctantly say, do it until you can find suitable replacements. So that's my recommendation. With that, if there's any questions,
is it in the city charter to allow city commissioners to serve?
I'm not sure about the charter, but the Michigan Enabling Act does provide for that discretion. So I think the charter is silent on ZBA appointments.
How busy has the ZBA been in the last 12 months? Pretty much?
Not busy. They may hear two, maybe three cases a year.
Their business hasn't been impacted or projects or
no, they've been able to function.
Thank you, Scott.
I agree. In support.
I agree. When we, a year ago, when we were getting all the boards and the appointments and everything under control and according to what ethically was sound and what was allowed by our charter, I think was thrown out there that, or asking if I wanted to serve on the CBA, but I knew the conflict of interest that was there, and that's why I never stepped forward or pursued that conversation or getting on the CBA because of the potential conflict of interest there. So I agree with the appointment, but...
I agree too, and I agree with the non-appointment of the city commissioner, so is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that the city commission appoint Robin Tatcher. Is that how you pronounce it?
What is it?
It's Tashwar.
Tashwar.
Tashwar. What Chris said, to the Zoning Board of Appeals to a term ending September 1st, 2025.
Okay, is there a second?
Support.
Any further discussion? Jessica, roll call, please.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Moody.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Item B, high wire corridor ordinance, first reading.
Certainly. As the city commission will recall, we recently received correspondence and a verbal presentation from Van Dam Dam of Van Dam Custom Boats and the Boeing Boatyard on Division Street, requesting support in their efforts to create a high wire corridor. It was presented that such a corridor would provide for improved and safer transport from their facilities on Division Street to their boat launch at the Harbor's Marina on Front Street. And I'll bring up a map shortly that shows the proposed route. And there's also a draft ordinance that our city attorney has prepared for the commission's review, consideration, and possible first reading tonight. Is staff understanding that the city commission desires to consider this matter further, based on successful experiences that the Moran Ironworks had in creating a similar high wire corridor and supporting ordinances establishing the corridor through their county and Rider City, we obtained copies of those ordinances, and our city attorney, Matt Cross, drafted an ordinance for your consideration. Since only city streets are involved in this request, only one ordinance is needed. We don't have to reach out to the county or the state or anything of that nature. The proposed high wire corridor ordinance is being presented to the City Commission tonight for a first reading. As required by the City Charter, ordinance amendments cannot be adopted until at least 1 month after the meeting it is introduced. Our next available City Commission meeting, if you choose to move forward with the first reading tonight, would be at our June 13th meeting. It is understood that this is the first draft of an ordinance that the City Commission is seeing, and the Commission may prefer to have additional time to review this matter. I'd also point out that we had put out today along the route that I'm going to bring up here in a second a number of our yellow public information signs so people can start to get a feel that something's going on there and inquire with regards to it. We'll leave it up for a couple days and then see if people have any questions for it. So it's my recommendation that the City Commission approve the first reading of the amendment to Chapter 54 of the Boyne City Code of Ordinances. To enact Article 4, Section 54-82, subsections 1 through 5, and then schedule a second reading on this matter at our June 13th, 2023 meeting, or later if the Commission so desires. And I'll bring up that map. Now is the proposed route, starting with their facility over here, continuing down to Pleasant Street, Pleasant to Front, and the Front into the entrance of the Harbor Jubilee parking area. Okay. I'm glad to address any questions you may have on this. Mr. Van Dam is also present as well.
Van Dam, 970 East Division Street, Van Dam Custom Boats and Boeing Boatyard. I think I shared my piece before, what this means to us as a business and allowing us to more safely more expeditiously move boats down the harbor's waterfront. One request I shared with Mike, in the ordinance, it's listed as 28 feet. I would like to request that be moved to 35, because I think there's possibility for that 28 to be a problem further down the road. So that's that. I'm happy to answer any questions and any concerns.
So you're not asking the city for any funding for this? This is just to create this ordinance so that you can do the votes and you're working with the power companies and other funding sources to make it happen?
That is correct, Mayor. We're intending on paying for this fully. The issue at hand is really if we can protect the work we are doing today. Yes.
So back to Mike first. So why are we having the reading before you notify all the people?
We do that simultaneously. There's no requirement that we post any notices at this point, but we think it's prudent to do so.
Okay.
And then we'll have a second opportunity at the second meeting as well to report that.
And then we talked about this, that if you just asked it again, so there's no financial commitment from the city for this. This is all on however you get it done. But, and it's a big but, now you will write your own grants and everything. I know you need the city to be able to issue them. But is there any cost to the city in that, Mr. Kane?
I mean, there might be some staff time if we were looking to help facilitate a grant or submit a grant with regards to it. There usually aren't any application fees with regards to it. My understanding is that there was a match that they would look to provide that match for us with regards to it, but I would let Mr. Van Damme speak.
Yes, that is correct. My request is, you know, in that regard, it is simply for grants that would require a public entity to submit them, that the city support us in that endeavor and be the fiduciary. But any financial requirement would come from us. If there was a match that was required, we would take care of that. We did not discuss directly whether staff time would be paid by us or not. I would hope, as being one of the larger taxpayers in our city, that some of that would be just part of doing business as a city. But this is something that is very important to our team, for our safety. I think it's going to make the corridor much more beautiful. I think it's going to keep traffic backups to a minimum, and we're prepared to support that financially and otherwise.
Well, I guess, okay, then let me expound further on that. What would be, I know you don't know how long it's going to take to write a grant or assist in writing a grant, but what kind of dollars would we be talking about if we're going to be liable for helping this? Because when it was originally pitched, it was going to be, no, this is the gig, and, you know, we're going to take care of it. But if the city's going to be chipping in funds, then I want to know what that's going to be. Time is funds.
Yeah. Mike, maybe the city has done this before where it served as an issuer for grants, correct?
Oh, sure.
From other organizations. Could you just give an example or two of how it's worked? Or is that,
Well, I mean, we've applied for grants for, like, facade improvements for buildings downtown, for design improvements that benefited specific property owners. We've applied for grants to basically do all the streetscapes in the downtown corridor with regards to it. We've done various road projects for various parts of town, like the East Street. The north section of East Street was a grant project that we got funded for that. So we've applied for grants all over the place to help various components of town. I don't know any particular grants that they're thinking of applying for. I know they've had some discussions with the Northern Lakes Economic Alliance to see what opportunities might be out there. But until I know a specific grant that they're looking to apply for or possibly ask us for a assistance with. I really can't give a cost figure per se. And, you know, the commission would like, you know, that's something that before we go, if there is an avenue to pursue, that they come back to the commission or something.
Just for clarification, the memo that's in front of us right now is approving the first reading of an amendment to Chapter 54 of the Boyne City Code of Ordinance to enact Article. So essentially, this is not committing us to being a financial institution.
No.
At any, say this reading gets approved and the second reading gets approved 6 months, a year down the road, he finds a grant opportunity. He comes to you in support of, hey, can the city help us get this public entity grant? Then it would come to the commission. The commission at that point in time would say, yes, we will help you with that grant. This is the application process. This is the hours that it would take. That's too many hours. We're not going to be able to help you with that. Or yes, that's within the realm of what we consistently have done in the past, and we can help out with that.
Correct.
Right.
That seems like a logical scenario.
Yeah.
No, I'm great with that explanation. I'd be fine with that. That's all. That's all I wanted to know. And as far as, you know, how we proceed, as far as the explanation of the different grants, I tell you, there was DDA, and then I mean, streetscape is, you know, what we do with the DPW and everything. So, but I respect Tim's response, and I'll accept that.
Yeah, then the 28 feet clearance and the 35 foot clearance. What's the current, you know, average, I guess, of lines across the road? You know?
I don't know what that average is. I think the low ones are sub 20 feet, maybe 19, 18 and a half, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
And those are the ones we're currently having to lift
right. And
stop at.
So when, I suppose when you were doing your homework on this, I'm sure you've talked to utility companies already.
Correct.
Would they plan on just going underground with theirs versus making a 35 foot tall or 28 foot tall?
So right now, all the communication lines are currently, you've probably seen the markings on the street, they will all be going underground in the next month and a half. The power side is the part that may still have some above ground lines. Apparently their primary lines, they don't like to jump underground and then back up. All the secondary lines will go underground. So we may have one, as I understand it, one or two crossings that will still exist as power lines. I'm working with them to try and solve that problem so they're all underground. But currently we might have two power line crossings that would still be above ground. Everything else will be routed underground.
I'm in full support. This is a win-win situation.
Okay. And I support this as well. Being a world-class business and having Wayne City be your home is really a great thing. We're not being really asked to do anything other than to create this ordinance and support a very important business in our community. So I'm full support of the business. And one of the questions I had, and I probably should have brought it up when you were here before about your letter, over the next 10 years, we will be looking at investing heavily in infrastructure expansion, including adding buildings on our property in the Vision Street and our waterfront location at the Harbridge. Have you thought that far ahead what those buildings might be or what the request might be?
We're actively trying to move towards more heavily focused on service, so they would be service buildings. So we would increase the size of our shops, essentially. We're not looking to increase the size of the number of storage customers we have. We're really looking to expand the shop size and do the technical work that we do.
And then by raising these two, you'd be able to take more boats that are familiar stored at Harvard and take them back to your.
That's exactly right. We're hoping, you know, if we can deal with a couple primary power lines, we might even be able to take masked up storage up to our property on Division Street also. So, the hope is that we can, you know, really increase. increase the size, the technical, kind of the more technically challenging boats that we can bring up to the shop and work on, and therefore expand our workforce, expand our shops, and have more fun.
So ideally, there would be less boats stored down at the harbor during the off-season.
In an ideal world, yeah. There are some people that's what they like. They like massed up on the hard at the waterfront storage, and you know, whether we try and promote them to come up to the shops, you know, it's a little bit to be determined. But the hope would be that we'd be able to transport more of those up to the shop.
Just so that you know that we did run this possible change to subsection 2 under section 54.82, which talks about the height from the 28 versus the 35, I think that Mr. Van Dam was requesting. And the attorney was finding that that's a minor modification that could be made either now or at the second meeting if the commission wanted to.
So if we were to approve this on the first reading, Mr. Van Dam is asking that we change the 28 to 35 feet, and height number 2, height requirements directed.
That's correct.
Okay, any other discussion, commissioners? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Excuse me.
Oh, Sandy, I did not go to the audience, I'm sorry.
Richard, 526 East Lincoln. I think Marty touched on a good point. These are changes that people like to know about. Shame on them if they're not fully engaged, but they aren't always. And I don't know, when did the signs go up?
They went up today.
So I'd say as a starting point, I'm going to say transparency and communication. Give it a chance to get out in front of the public. And the people of the community would be the first thing. Question, the need to raise is from right now it says 28 and needs to go to 35, but I heard the ones that are sticklers are to George's question. Most of them are 18 and a half and 19 are the ones that are the problem. So my question is, why does it need to go to 35? Maybe he answered that, but I missed it. Maybe it was the masked up aspect to it. In terms of city funding down the road, I recognize what Tim had to say. Our community, they're $176,000 short for the Field of Dreams, which serves everyone. Pickleball people, Little League people all have to find a way to fund what they do. So I would be prudent in considering how much the city ultimately would commit to a private enterprise. Just a caution there. It sounds as though we're looking at, there aren't any more boat slips yet. Is there going to be an increase in the what we call in and out service that will go along with that? That would be a question I'm sure that others in the community. It's one thing to launch boats fall and spring, but and it sounds as though the Van Dams are fleshing out their business plan and their model, which I think is another reason to give them a chance to maybe get some harder answers, but that would be something I would be interested to know, is what portion of that benefit would go to more in and out temporary launches. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
I got all my over there. You're pretty loud. All right. Chris Christensen, 125 Stewart Street. I'm not opposed to this project at all, and quite honestly, I'm looking more at the long-term ramifications of what's here. I mean, to go from the 18-foot problem to virtually double the height of the wire, I mean, at one point in time, there was a discussion around here a few years back, and I say a few years back, about going to underground electrical wires. And I know it wasn't branched all the way up to Vision at that time, but it was primarily out of the downtown area, but I think that at some point the vision was to have an underground, you know, kind of a view corridor type thing. I mean, it used to be a day where you could see down virtually every street in Boyne City and catch the lake. Not that the wires are the problem, just the development and all that, but before we go and make rules and exceptions that are going to double the height of the thing, again, I'm not opposed to it. It's a solution to a problem. I understand it, but for the opportunity to tackle a longer-term outcome here, consideration to maybe look at underground as an option and start with a corridor like this, because it's a major corridor, Division Street, Pleasant Avenue, these are major corridors. It's not like you're asking to go underground on, you know, parts of Cedar or you know, Pine or anything like that yet. I mean, anyway, so anyway, that's what I'm just saying, weigh all the options. I mean, I know that the power companies are not huge fans of the underground wire, but there are a number of communities that have gone to that, and it actually really helps with the, you know, the overall presentation of the neighborhood sort of feel when you're not, you know, poking these wires all over the place. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, so commissioners, are there any additional questions you have?
Yeah, from public comments, Ben, will can you anticipate this increasing in and out services?
No, I don't. In fact, I think it will do the opposite. Part of the reason to increase the height is to increase the size of the project we're able to work on. As I mentioned, we are not trying to expand the number of boats we store. In fact, we're trying to reduce the number of boats we store by increasing the size of the boat we store. So if anything, it will reduce the number of trips, not this year, but certainly 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. That's the intent.
And then the other question, it was a thought that I had as well, but I think you kind of touched on it when you first started talking, was that like the cable companies and that, they are able to do the underground. And why is it that you're struggling with the underground? Is it consumers?
Consumers. Yep. My understanding, and certainly I don't claim to be an expert at this, but my understanding is the primary line for safety concerns, and I'm not clear, I believe it's a stepped up voltage. They don't like to have that running high, go underground and go high, in which the primary line, of course, is continuing on. The secondary line is going to either come from a transformer, going to, you know, local houses. It sounds like they're happy to bring those underground and run them around where they need to. But my understanding is the primary, they're at least reticent to just say yes right away. Whether I can wear them down or not, I'm not sure yet.
Is that something that you think you can wear them down on?
I don't know, to be completely honest. And I have seen, I guess I would say, the opportunity to at least have the conversation with them. So I'm hopeful.
I'll make a motion to approve a first reading of an amendment to Chapter 54 of the Boeing Code of Ordinance to enact Article 4, Section 54.82, 1 through 5, and schedule a second reading on June 13th, 2023, or later, with the change to the ordinance to 35 feet instead of 28 feet.
Is there a second? Further discussion? Jessica, roll call, please.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Conklin. Moody.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay.
discussed it, our closed session request from the city manager. Consider the request from city manager Michael King going to closed session for discussion of collective bargaining strategy as provided in MCL 15.323A of the Michigan Open Meetings Act. And number two, consider the request from city manager Michael King to go into closed session for periodic personnel evaluation of a public officer as provided in MCL 15.268A of the Michigan Open Meetings Act. So with that, we can go to the, I guess we should go to the end of the order before we begin our regular meeting here. Is there anything, commissioners, do you have for putting the order? Okay, announcements are the next regular city commission meeting is scheduled for May 23rd, 2023, at 12 p.m. So, if we could have a motion to enter.
I'll make a motion to enter closed session.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? Roll call, Jessica.
Conklin.
Aye.
Moody.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Lassiter.
Aye.
Nemechek.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Recording stopped.